Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
On January 29th of 2022, a phone left a rental house on Potomac Avenue in Jacksonville and went for a drive. An FBI agent traced the route for the jury on the fourth day of Mario Fernandez's murder trial. The phone traveled south toward Jared Breidigan's neighborhood, then to the gymnastics facility his kids use, then out to Jacksonville Beach. The phone belonged to Henry Tenen, the man prosecutors say was hired to kill Jared Breidigan. The rental house belonged to Mario Fernandez, the man they say did the hiring. As Tenen's phone ran that route, an FBI agent, Bobby Blythe, testified Fernandez's phone was pinging around the Potomac property. Blythe does cellular analysis for the FBI. Tower records GPS data let him place a phone inside a radius of a few meters, and he spent 2 hours placing those two phones for a jury based on the records of which the tower recorded them with the GPS data, lining it all out for the jury to see. 18 days later, Jared Breidigan was ambushed and killed in Jacksonville Beach after these phones kind of did the same route, it seems. Handful of days earlier, prosecutors called January 29th a practice run. The defense calls it a work day and points to surveillance showing Fernandez meeting contractors and hauling construction materials at that property. The jury's read on that one Saturday may decide this trial. The defense had a strong fourth day, and almost all of it came from what's missing. Lead Detective Chris Johns agreed on cross-examination that no DNA ties Fernandez to the blue Ford F-150 linked to the ambush. He agreed no fingerprints, no surveillance footage put Fernandez inside that truck. The gun gave them more of the same. Prosecutors allege Fernandez got a 10-millimeter handgun from John Biggerstaff, a friend he'd known since high school. Johns conceded there's no physical evidence any handoff happened and the weapon has never been found. Investigators wanted that gun badly enough to offer Biggerstaff immunity if he'd say he supplied it. He declined. Biggerstaff's son was a Texas police officer, and in December of 22, agents sent him to wear a wire against his own father. No gun ever surfaced. The rarity argument took a hit, too. ATF agent Mike Stengel acknowledged that Glock made multiple 10-millimeter models. And then investigators found records of 6 10-millimeter purchases at one Jacksonville gun store alone. Jesse Dreicher even went after the boots investigators pulled from Tenen's truck in Fernandez's home. Johns acknowledged he couldn't rule out that other boots might match the surveillance footage, though he said the flaps on these matched it better. The defense had an answer on timing, too. Breidigan died on Wednesday evening, driving away from a custody exchange. And Dreicher pointed out that the Wednesday schedule sat in public court filings. Anyone who pulled the docket would learn which night to expect him. Every item on that list belongs to a different job than the one Fernandez is charged with. Prosecutors have never claimed he drove the truck or fired the gun. In the state's theory, that work belonged to Henry Tenen, who withdrew his guilty plea in February and faces his own jury in March of 27. Fernandez is charged with first-degree murder and solicitation to commit a capital felony. Solicitation works like this, and why so many of these points that don't seem to add up were never meant to add up. But if you're a defense attorney and you have to convince a jury to go to reasonable doubt in some way, shape, or form, you're going to intentionally pitch things to them that don't have an answer. Well, his DNA's not on the tire. DNA's not on the gun. Yeah, well, he's never in question to be there to begin with. So let's not sit here and act shocked about it not being there. But if the jury that doesn't follow the case doesn't know that, they might too be shocked. Well, that doesn't make any sense. He's accused of this, right? No, not directly. He's not accused of being in that car, pulling the trigger, everything. No, he's accused of orchestrating this, the conspiracy end of it. So, it's spooky. He's not on this stuff. Well, it's not part of the argument to begin with. Fernandez is charged with first-degree murder and solicitation to commit a capital felony. Solicitation works like this. One man asks another man to commit a crime and offers him something for doing it. If the killing happens, Florida law lets the state charge the man who asked with the murder himself, or asked for the murder himself, to basically be charged with the murder. That's how Fernandez can face a murder count without anyone claiming his finger touched a trigger. Those charges draw the map of what prosecutors have to prove: direction, communication, and money. An orchestrator's DNA doesn't belong in the truck because the orchestrator was never supposed to be near the truck. The absence the defense spent hours building is the same absence the state's theory predicts. 20 years of crime television trained juries to expect a swab and a match before they'll convict anyone of anything. Fernandez lawyers know it. And a full day of missing fingerprints aims straight at that reflex. It invites 12 people to grade this case against the gunman's checklist while the man in front of them is accused of writing the plan. The day still cost the state something real. In October 22, ATF agents used location data from Tenon's phone to find the blue truck at the home of a man named Jimmy Jones. A find that agents described as a major break. Then investigators never searched Jones' property for the missing gun, and they never collected DNA from Jones. Stengel and Johns, both admitted it on cross. On redirect, prosecutor Christina Stifler walked Johns to an answer. He testified that investigators received information in 23 that the murder weapon was destroyed shortly after the shooting. The defense disputes that account, and the jury is left weighing a secondhand explanation against a search that never actually took place. So the case comes back to the evidence pointed at Fernandez himself, and it starts with a lease. Tenon rented a house Fernandez owned in northwest Jacksonville, about 25 miles from the street where Breitigan actually died. The alleged hitman and the alleged hirer were connected before a single shot was fired through rent. The arrest warrant lays out the state's timeline. Prosecutors allege the plot began on November 1st of 21. They say Tenon joined it on January 4th, 22. The very next day, Blythe's data shows Tenon's phone sitting within a few meters of Fernandez's own home. The timeline keeps moving through January. On January 25th, Blythe's data puts Fernandez's phone at Biggerstaff's home for nearly 3 hours. Searches for 10-millimeter firearms show up on Biggerstaff's account 4 days later. The same Saturday, Tenon's phone ran the route past Breitigan's world. The why in the state's telling comes from a custody war. Jared's widow, Kristen Breitigan, testified the fight with the ex-wife Shanna Gardner ran so deep that there was absolutely no trust. So everything was in writing. A friend told investigators Gardner believed her husband Fernandez could take care of Jared because of his military background. The jury had heard Fernandez's own voice on the subject. In a 2022 police interview played earlier in the trial, he called Breitigan a keyboard warrior. After the murder came the money. Fernandez wrote 10 and 3 checks, $2,000, $3,000. Dated March 28th, 22, and 5,000 dated April 4th, about 6 weeks after Breitigan died. One memo line referenced landscaping, another read Kickstarter, good luck. Prosecutors say the checks dressed up payment for killing as yard work. It's an interesting way to pass off checks. The defense reads the same paper a little differently. The checks, it says, covered legitimate work on Fernandez's properties. And one memo line may actually say roofing. Maybe there's a little of both going on there, actually. Maybe some of it is actual work. And that's part of the play. That's part of the mask up here. The state played phone calls on the fourth day as well. In late January 23, the days around Tenen's arrest, recorded calls caught Fernandez discussing that arrest with his friend Carlos Flong. He testified he had no idea anyone was listening. The first call touched Gardner's separation from Fernandez and her move across the country. On the call, I mean, the day after the arrest, Fernandez said of Tenen that he was honestly trying to remember any recollection of him. The phone records say the remembering shouldn't have been that hard. By the arrest warrant's account, Fernandez and Tenen had 35 phone contacts in February 2022 and 30 more in March. So this whole I don't remember you thing, well, who's on your phone communicating with him? Bly's testimony then reached the day before the murder. On February 15th, Fernandez's phone spent almost an hour at Tenen's residence from just after 4 p.m. until nearly 5. For roughly half of it, the two devices overlapped in the same spot. Kind of shoots the whole I don't know him thing out the door. The night of February 16th, license plate readers caught the blue truck three separate times. And between 7:11 and 8:19 p.m., Fernandez's phone produced records at all. Just off the map, you know, like Koberger. The shooting happened around 7:45, squarely inside that silence. Blythe told the jury the pattern is consistent with the phone powered off or set to airplane mode. By the end of the day, the defense had two kinds of answers on the table. For the gunman's evidence, it had subtraction. And for the routes and the checks, it had stories. A renovation day, a roofing bill, a story can be weighed and picked apart in a jury room. The 65 phone contacts, the hour at Tenen's house on the 15th, and the phone that went dark while Jared Breitigan was dying, all wait for the defense's turn with Blythe. That fight happens on the state's ground. The plan and the money where the defendant actually lives in this case. Testimony is continuing. Gardner faces Shanna Gardner, her, the one behind me on that graphic if you're watching us on YouTube, faces her own jury starting at the end of August. They're planning to wrap up Mario probably within the next week. She's on deck. This is kind of almost like a preview of what is to come, or not. She's also charged with first-degree murder in the same killing. Tenen's trial waits till 2027, the man who actually is accused of the shooting. Whether the jury decides, or whatever, really, the jury decides about January 29th, the route itself sits in evidence. A phone traced a father's world on a Saturday afternoon. His street, his kid's gym, the beach town where he'd die. On February 16th, along the same stretch of territory, someone laid a tire in the road and waited for Jared Breitigan to stop. All a big coincidence? Or something far darker? Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. Is there a world where Mario and Shanna have nothing to do with this? Is there a world? I'm trying to see it. There's a lot of holes in evidence, but the overall picture is pretty grim, in my opinion. Did Mario and Shanna, if they did it, put enough blocks between themselves and Tenen to not end up taking the rap for the murder? That's really what the question is. Or they didn't do it at all. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Love for you to weigh in. Be sure to take us along with you wherever you are listening to podcasts. Right there, that is the QR code. It'll take you to our podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you're listening. Go ahead, hit that, hit subscribe, and take us with you. And we'll continue our conversation in the comments section. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
One more case to talk about as we continue to break down all these three big trials that are going on right now. Jared Breidigan was a 30-year-old father of four, Microsoft engineer, devout member of his church on February 16th of 2022. He dropped his twins off at his ex-wife Shanna Gardner's house, and on the drive home with his two-year-old daughter Brexley strapped in the back seat, he stopped to move a tire out of the road, a tire the prosecutors say was put there on purpose. He was shot and killed while his daughter sat 10 feet away in her car seat. Now the man accused of hiring the shooter is on trial. The ex-wife's trial starts in about 3 weeks, directly at the end of this one, and the admitted gunman just withdrew his guilty plea and says, none of it's true. All this stuff I said, they hired me. I'm a witness for the state. He withdrew that. He's going to be on trial now, too. The audience wants to know one thing. Who is telling the truth and who is trying to survive? We're going to do some Q&A with your questions that you've dropped in the comment section. If you got some right now, drop them. We'll try to get to them. Robin Drake and myself breaking it down. One of our first questions here. The prosecution says the only connection between the shooter, Henry Tenen, and Jared Breidigan is Mario Fernandez. That's a powerful statement, but the defense is showing video of Tenen doing actual work, tilling, tree removal, landscaping at Fernandez's property. How does a jury decide whether $10,000 in checks was payment for contract work or payment for a murder? And let me just set this up a little bit for the audience to understand if you're not familiar with this. Yep. Tenen, Henry Tenen, the alleged trigger man here, who already came out to law enforcement and admitted guilt, but has now withdrawn that and now wants a trial, is the originally said, yes, they hired me to do it. He was a tenant of Fernandez, of homes that he owned. And he had been allegedly doing some work for him, some groundwork, things like that, that would require payment. And shortly after the murder, he started getting checks from Fernandez that ended up totaling about $10,000. The checks had notes that corresponded with labor work. One of them even said, Kickstarter, good luck. Again, totaling $10,000. Tenen saying, yeah, it's for the actual work. It's not for a murder. See, the check note says it. As if that's just the end thing. Tenen's DNA was found on the tire that was rolled out in the road. He's associated with the truck that was there. And the only connection between Tenen and the dead guy, Jared Breidigan, is Fernandez, mm-hmm. who's the ex-husband of Jared Breidigan, the dead guy in this case, married to Shannon Gardner. So it certainly looks... It looks like there's a bit of a connection with new husband of the wife, mother of these kids, and the death of Jared Breidigan through Tenen. So what's your thoughts on that, Robin, now that we kind of have that in place? See, it can't possibly be for murder because the check memo says it was for a Kickstarter. Good luck.
So it was because he admitted it.
Oh, there's that.
Yeah. So I looked at the background of all these people again. We covered this case a while ago, and so I had to refresh my memory. We had a run for a while of murder for hires because murder for hires are pretty typical that it's generally caused by a child custody issue, which is exactly the case here.
Yep.
So this young couple got married. They're both LDS members, Latter-day Saint Mormons.
Go figure, another one.
Yeah, they got married after about 3 months of knowing each other. They had twins together. One of the twins had a lot of medical issues, so they moved around the country a bit, so they eventually wind up in Florida. They then get divorced, very contentious, child custody issue. The wife leaves the religious side aside, she meets this guy, Mario, who is former army, gets discharged with an other than honorable. I'm looking at he basically was charged but not convicted of a sexual assault inside the army as a drill sergeant, not drill instructor. Those are Marines. Yeah. So he gets out. So you can see we got an arc of some unsavory behavior from Mario. They get married as a convenience, apparently, as an arrangement so that she could battle for the children, and he was playing the role of father for them. So that's where this entanglement happened. And so the ex-husband is battling for the kids, and so this guy, Tenen, comes in, who's also got a horrendous criminal record, and he then gets hired, supposedly, by Mario Fernandez, the new husband, to take out the ex-husband.
Yeah.
So here's what's interesting. He admits it originally as part of a plea deal, and the plea deal was, I think, he's going to serve like 10 years in prison for.
Yeah. He took the plea deal.
Right.
Agreed to testify against Fernandez and Gardner, right. And then earlier this year, walked into court and looked at the judge and said, "I want a trial."
And here's why. Here's my conjecture on this one. Like we just said a few minutes ago on the Tupac case, snitches get stitches. So he's weighing his odds here, right? So no matter whether he goes to trial or he takes a plea deal, either way, he's going in the clink. And he's going to be either the guy who snitched out someone behind bars or the guy who didn't snitch out the guy behind bars. And so he's weighing his odds because, you know, this is a smart guy.
Okay. Yeah, he looks it.
And so I just think he's like, well, what do I got to lose, man? I can at least swing for the fences here. I'll throw everyone under the bus and see what happens.
Robin, I get, is that your take on this? Because that's going to be my next question, is why change your testimony?
I mean,
he got a pretty sweet deal for murdering someone. And it's clear as day that he's going to be behind bars either way, one right. for less amount of time, one for basically eternity. He's trading in the lesser amount of time for eternity to essentially protect the two of them. I don't understand this. Or is Tenen looking at reality going, I maybe have 10, 15 years left in me. That's about the time I'm going to be incarcerated for.
Yep.
I don't want to be the snitch behind bars.
Yep.
So is that it? Is that the motivating? Is that the inspiration that you think made him change his idea or his story on what he wants the courts to believe?
I put it at 95 to 98 or maybe 99%. Remember, so it's sometimes it's hard for us and we overcomplicate things because our listeners, ourselves, we're very empathetic people. And we might do something empathetic to take care of someone else. You really think this scumbag, dirtbag is actually thinking of the well-being of these two people?
No,
more than
that's
himself?
Why it didn't make any sense to me. Like, why is he doing this?
Self-preservation. I took a look at the odds on this, and I said to myself, you know, again, reverse the situation, put yourself in the shoes. What would inspire me to change my tune like this? And then you just look at the facts and details behind it. It's like, wow. Regardless of what I do, I'm going to be behind bars. Now, what's being behind bars in general population look like if I do this or if I do this? And if you're going to be behind bars from 10 years or for the rest of your life, what do you want that to look like? What's it going to look like? What's a guarantee of what it looks like if you are, one, the hitman for, in other words, the mope that was hired by someone to kill a father, and then you snitched and gave up the father and the wife to do it, or you're just the guy behind bars because when they show up, the first thing that the cell block does is you got to present your papers, you know, what are you in here for? And everyone behind bars knows what they're in there for. They know if they're a cooperator or not a cooperator. I think he's hedging his bets on the best life he can possibly get behind bars since he's going there no matter what.
I didn't even consider it that way, but that does make a lot of sense.
Remember, remember, human beings will always act in what they think is their best interest. It sometimes is very complicated to figure out what they think their best interests are, but in times when you're dealing with idiots, which is 99% of the people we deal with in the world of true crime, their best interest is, how can I have the least amount of pain inflicted on me? This is it.
And that's true. I mean, it comes down to really like your understanding of the systems. I've never been in the prison system. I only understand it from the viewpoint of an understanding of how we talk about it here. And I do know the you know, snitches get stitches, you know, way that works. But oftentimes, I think a lot of us, at least I do, incorrectly, think, well, if it's connected to that case, if there's somebody else behind bars that's somehow connected that's going to get back at you. It's not about that. It's about your moral standing, about your character. If you're someone who snitched in your own case and you get behind bars, they're going to judge you for the decisions of which you made within your own case. And if you snitched in that case, well, guess what? They're going to look at you as, well, this is what this person does. And yeah, that would make a lot of sense as to why he's making that change.
And now that is based on the data I have today.
Yeah.
Living in the world of maybe, that is the only reasonable explanation I can come up with about, because again, people act in their own best interest. He wants to feel safe. What's the best way he can feel safe? Since he's going to be behind bars no matter what, what's the best way he can go behind bars and feel safe?
There is a bit of a twist, a bombshell maybe, to the case. The prosecutor saying that Tenen was not alone the night of the shooting. Someone allegedly fled on foot and someone else drove a truck away from the scene. If there's a fourth person involved who hasn't been charged, how does that change the entire case? It's one of the questions we got on YouTube. Well, I mean, I guess it can put, I don't know if it injects reasonable doubt, but it certainly injects, well, who else was involved? Tenen's DNA is on, you know, it's there.
Everything.
It's on the tire. It's on everything.
It's in the truck.
Yeah, there's not a lot of debate over whether he was there and involved. Yeah, it's more so who else was involved, and I guess why haven't we found them? When you have a mystery perpetrator in this, you got one guy who's involved, but they're treating this as if no one else was involved, other than we know someone else ran away from the scene, but our investigation wasn't good enough to get us there. I'm wondering how that'll play in front of a jury. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's part of the calculation that Tenen made. So he gets a new attorney because he also said he wasn't served well by his attorney that advised him to take the plea deal, and he found that the plea deal sucked, and so he didn't want to do the plea deal. Again, I think it goes back to the fact that the plea deal said you're going behind bars, and his new attorney probably said, well, if we can actually sow some reasonable doubt in the jury and I can make some challenges of suppression of some evidence here and there, you actually not only have a better chance if you go behind bars because you're no longer a snitch, but there's a chance, higher chance than otherwise, if you pled guilty, that I might be able to get you off. So I think reasonable doubt might come into play for this, because now, would Tenen give anyone else up? No, we're not going to do that, because again, snitches get stitches, but allowing that theory to float out there and even giving evidence to support the theory without actually directly corroborating it himself through testimony, I would do it.
It's going to be interesting. Shanna's attorney is Jose Baez, very well-known attorney, very successful attorney, one that's not going to take on cases that I think he thinks he's got a good chance at losing. Shanna's is a different case than Mario's, and we're going to get to that right after this trial wraps up. But that's a big bet to make, arguing that I can prove that she had nothing to do with it, or that Mario, I mean, he's not representing her, but essentially, I mean, the cases are very intertwined. But the defense is basically arguing, you know, Fernandez is just a guy who hired a handyman. The prosecution is arguing he's a man who hired a hitman. Same check, same phone call, same relationship, two completely different stories on what happened here. And both can look identical, from the outside looking in. But that connection, you'd have to believe that for some reason, a tenant of Shanna's new husband, Mario, for some reason decided, I want to go murder the ex-husband of Shanna by putting a tire in the road and being involved in that, just for no reason at all.
Right.
With no egging on by them, no agreement with them, no asking of them, just one day, I'm going to go kill that guy. Why not? That's what kills it, I think, for anybody, is of course you guys are involved. But is there a world? Is there a world where the 10,000-foot overview of, these checks say it's for Kickstarter and lawn work, not for murder? And I guess, you know, he might have done lawn work and he might have had a Kickstarter, which maybe that money was technically for. But at the same point, you're suddenly getting it maybe for some other reason. I mean, is there a world where that equates to reasonable doubt inside a reasonable jury?
Again, it comes down to the lawyers and how good they are presenting it, what gets suppressed and what doesn't get suppressed. It's in this case, I think it's a real stretch because you have a timeline, because you have a lot of DNA that shows Tenon at the site, the connection between the two. And then it comes down to what's the gain? So you say that, you know, they're saying $10,000 for lawn work, but he's not connected to this other thing. And even if... there's always an intent to gain something from an action you take. And so if not Tenon, then who? I mean, there's no one actually fits the bill. You could actually say Fernandez was there doing it, but that doesn't really quite fit with the timeline, with the cell phone data, and see what I mean? And also the video evidence up apparently, because the clothes he was wearing was captured on video surveillance camera as well. The clothes, the gait, the walk, everything matched Tenon. I mean, there's a lot of evidence against Tenon on this. And to claim it's not him and that the money was meant for this other thing, well, then what did you do it for to begin with? See what I mean? There's such a disconnect between that. There's got to be a motivation to take the action of X, Y, and Z. It's a rough one to.
Does it ever surprise you when you see what people do in an effort to conceal or cover something up, and what they think is just airtight? Like, let me just write this memo on this check. It says Kickstarter. Good luck. That'll keep them off our tracks. And it's just, I mean, it's so surface. It's so stupid. It's so disprovable. But when they're writing it, they're thinking, damn, we're good.
Yeah. And it's not just they think, damn, they're good. Remember, we say this multiple times in the last couple of days, especially when dealing with the Lindsey Clancy case, and that is when you're in the rainstorm, all you see is rain, and you think the entire world is raining. Meanwhile, you take one step this way, and you got sunshine and blue skies, right? And so in this case here, you're thinking, everyone hates this guy. You know, no one's going to pay attention if he's gone. All I got to do is come up with a simple little explanation. They'll blow it off because no one really gives a rat's ass because I don't care. My ex-wife-to-be doesn't care because they're actually in the middle of separating at the time. And this mope that is a lifelong criminal anyway, he's not going to care. So when you're living in a small little microcosm, that 3-to-5-person confab, you think it's the entire universe. You think that mindset is going to be everyone's mindset. Meanwhile, you take one half step out of there, you just offed a father that's beloved by his family, by his children, and an entire world gets up, you know, in an uprage about it because you're actually the nutter when you actually thought the rest of the world was victimizing you.
Yeah, it's amazing how when one is only living in their bubble, how much they don't see of what's going on outside of it.
That's why we have living critics, you know, loving critics, because they're the objective people for us. But if your loving critic is inside your Nutterville, you're doomed.
Exactly. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in and give us your thoughts tomorrow. Eric Fattis is going to be with us. We're going to be going over a lot of these cases as well from a legal standpoint, from the prospect or from the viewpoint of a former prosecutor and a defense attorney. So join us tomorrow, 11 Central, for that. Be sure to check out Robin's latest book, It's Not All About Me, available wherever you get books and audiobooks. Leave a review on Amazon. That is much appreciated. And that'll wrap up today's episode. Give us your thoughts, like I said, in the comments section. Until next time, for Todd, for Robin, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Oh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, Lady Luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just $10.
$10 for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.